The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Woke up to a blanket of snow covering Edmond today. Massive snowstorm crossing through the Midwest. I think I heard on the news, the local news last night, it's coming up through the panhandle of Texas. So it's not often that we get it coming up from the south. I guess it's coming from the west as well. But a beautiful scene today in Edmond at God's headquarters campus. 5-6 inches of snow outside. It doesn't seem super cold, so it's probably going to melt away during the day. So enjoy it early if you can in preparation for it. I'm glad I watched the local news because I didn't know anything about this. And I parked the car in the garage last night backwards so that I could just zoom right out up the driveway and across campus, and got here early enough to hear all of the feature story news at the top of the hour. That was a dreadful experience. All of the left-wing media, we're going to have to search for a better news source at the top of the hour. So much propaganda, so much fake news, and they all say the same thing, all of them. They all say the same thing. It certainly makes you appreciate thetrumpet.com and the Trumpet magazine and the Key of David and this program. Well, here we are entering into a new calendar year, and we'll talk some a little bit again about the year that was 2020. Also, coming up on today's program, we'll spend some time talking about the COVID panic and also what God has to say about good health. And you'll recall some of the programs we did back in March and April of what is now last year, where we really did emphasize God's health laws, something that's completely missing from all of the coverage about COVID-19. Coming into this year, 2021, it's official. Brexit is finally official, meaning that the UK has its independence back. Melanie Phillips says, on this day, the UK regains its status as an independent, sovereign nation governed by laws passed by its own democratically elected parliament, free of control by a foreign power. And of course, those of you that follow this program or read the literature produced by this church, you know well that this is Bible prophecy fulfilled. Herbert Armstrong was talking about this back in the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s. Even as the UK was drawn in to this economic union, and then later it became the European Union. And Herbert Armstrong was there saying, Britain is not going to be part of it. Now it's fulfilled. Now it's final. Now it's finally happened. So we don't want to lose sight of the significance of that development happening throughout the year 2020, among a lot of other things. What a crazy year it was. I really appreciated the Babylon Bee's take on just how bad the year was. In so many ways, it was a bad year, certainly with fulfilled prophecy, very significant. But in terms of suffering, when you look at the picture across the board, certainly there were those who did suffer physically. But I think some perspective is in order, and we have to turn to the Babylon Bee, the satire site, to just appreciate the bigger picture. It says, across the country, there is general consensus that 2020 has been the worst year ever. According to studies, 82%, and of course all of their studies are bogus, but it's funny nonetheless. According to studies, 82% of Americans agree that 2020 has been a terrible year of unprecedented suffering and misery. Experts confirm that 2020 was indeed the worst year, provided you have never lived in virtually any other time period in all of human history. As long as you've not lived during any other time period. Yes, indeed. This year, or rather 2020, was the worst year ever. Was it really the worst year ever? I'll give you some scriptures in just a moment where Jesus talks about how bad it's going to be just before the return of Christ. And that's what's so shocking, really, about what we've witnessed in 2020. To see the way that mankind has responded to a flu epidemic and the lockdowns that have followed and the panic that has set in and all of the rush to take vaccines, to put poisons into our bodies, to try to fight off another poison. That's the way it works in man's society. It says here, we noticed that most of the respondents who called 2020 the worst year also enjoyed delicious food being delivered to them for 8 months while they sat on their couches with the air conditioning on and binge-watched shows the whole time, said one researcher. there's a lot of truth in that. A few have suffered, and a lot of people have gotten lazy. That's the truth. A lot of people have been just sitting around. Now, there's plenty of other people that want to get back to work, and they're angry. They're angry with the leadership, with their mayors, with their governors. It says here again, one final paragraph. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it makes a good point, even when it's joking. It says, while we understand it hasn't been easy, we also found very few instances of Viking raids, Black Plague, famine, World War, using rotary telephones, needing to look things up in a physical dictionary, slavery, people being burned at the stake, walking miles to school, living in caves, sleeping on the ground, ice ages, Nazi Holocaust, civil war, infant mortality, global floods, ethnic cleansing, and on it goes. Has this really been the worst year ever? You look at some of these billionaires, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, others, the Google people, this has been a booming year for them. Even President Trump tweeted out yesterday, the highest stock market in history, setting records with 401ks. So for a lot of people, this was a boom year. And that's pretty incredible when you think of the stock market. I looked at my notes yesterday from January 1st, 2020, a year ago. And there was a few items in there about the predictions for the stock market and the economy. And, of course, a lot of those didn't pan out because the economy, certainly it didn't. But with respect to the stock market and other things in the economy, it's astounding, really, that it's done as well as it has, given months of lockdown, considering what our governments have done to the economy. They've just shut things down. They've run restaurants out of business. But getting back to the point that the Babylon Bee makes with its satire, has it really been the worst year ever? It's scary, really. If we didn't know what we know regarding Bible prophecy, well, I guess in fact, knowing what we know, it shows just how ridiculous the last year was. So much human reasoning, so much deception, so many lies. Jeremiah 30 and verse 7 speaks of a time of Jacob's trouble, when trouble's coming upon the whole world. But in particular, Jacob refers to the nations of Israel. That would be the United States and Britain, primarily. The worst ever trouble that we've ever experienced. It's not that we're going to be comparing it to 2020. Oh, wow. Is it going to be worse than 2020? No, let's go back to 1941 or 1942. You think of some of the other things that happened, even during the 20th century, in China, in Russia, Cambodia, and on it goes. Genocide. The Holocaust. What did Jesus mean in Matthew 24 when he said we're coming upon a time of great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time? What did he mean by that? Was he just talking about an 8 or 9 month lockdown period where the government sent out all these handouts and where a lot of people just kind of sat at home and watched Netflix? Is that what Jesus referred to? Or is it something much worse? A time of trouble like this world has never seen. Daniel 12 and verse 1 says the same thing. It's in the Old Testament and the New. Matthew 24, 21 and 22. I mentioned Jeremiah 30 and verse 7. We've got to prepare ourselves for what's coming. We've got to be emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically prepared for what's coming. As I say, we'll spend some time at the end of this program talking about even God's physical health laws and how important those are to be confident and bold and faithful, not careless or reckless. There are laws of quarantine. We quarantine because we love our neighbor, but we quarantine when we're sick, not when we're healthy, not when we're feeling good. When we're feeling good and healthy, we work, we serve God. And God wants us to be as healthy as possible from day one of any calendar year all the way through to the last day of the year so that we can serve him, so that we can draw closer to him, so that we can help him in his work. Well, as I say, I don't want to take away from the fact that 2020 was a momentous year, prophetically speaking. And here we are coming into 2021 now. President Trump, he returns from his vacation at Mar-a-Lago. I guess that was, what, yesterday or the day before? I know I missed yesterday's program. Richard, by the way, did a great job. I'll come to his program. He subbed in yesterday. I'll come to that here in just a second. But just a few things first about the president coming back to Washington, D.C., to the White House before even the New Year's celebration that's so popular in this world, this pagan celebration of the New Year on the calendar, the Roman calendar. He comes back early, and of course, that leads to a lot of wild speculation. What could be happening? Why did he come back? Is something big about to happen? This was CNN's take, clip one.
This is really unusual. The president typically spends New Year's Eve here because he has that party at Mar-a-Lago every year. A lot of guests come in town. They did this year, and they were told the president was going to be there. But now we have learned that the president is actually going to be leaving Florida earlier than he was slated to do so. He was supposed to go until later this week, maybe on Friday, I believe. But now he's going to be leaving here tomorrow morning to go back to Washington, and aides aren't really sure what the president is going back for. But sources have said that he's been incredibly irritated this week, that he has not stopped fuming about everything from the election loss to the renovations that are happening. And so I think it's just part of this pattern that we've seen where the president has been really unpredictable more than ever since the election. And that's continuing with this trip back to Washington earlier than it was expected.
He's unpredictable. He's irritated. Oh, he's just unhinged. You can't even possibly predict what he's going to do next. Well, he's still the president of the United States. And he's still fighting against the greatest election fraud in the history of the United States. And good for him. There's all that this report from Pennsylvania, these blank ballots. Well, I guess the count. There was a Pennsylvania Republican group that tallied up the numbers of ballots that were submitted. They came up with 6.96 million ballots that were cast. Problem with that figure is that the Pennsylvania Department of State, they said that there was 6.76 million, so about 200,000 less votes. Oh, everywhere that you look, you see all of these discrepancies. How do you now? Keep in mind, Biden supposedly beat Donald Trump by 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania. And so now they're having the authorities there are having to explain, well, how come there's a 200,000 vote difference? Some have said, well, that's just accounting for those ballots that were cast without actual voting. In other words, they were blank. That's what the election officials have said in Pennsylvania. But this goes back to the alarm that President Trump was sounding before the election, before November 3rd. Look, when you're just sending out millions and millions and millions of ballots to anybody and everybody, that just opens the way for all kinds of fraud. And if there are supposedly 200,000 blank ballots, well, who took care of those ballots? Where are they? Have they been examined? Did they count for one candidate or another, or were they just set aside? Lots of questions. You would think that the full forces of government, the DOJ, and even the Democrat Party, that they would be doing anything and everything possible to get to the bottom of this. And yet everyone, for the most part, across the board, Democrat, Republican alike, except for the inner circle around President Trump, they say, move on. Nothing to see here. Nothing to worry about here. Just keep calm and carry on. That's what they're saying. And President Trump won't do it. Of course, we're coming up to some momentous dates in the next couple of weeks. You've got the Senate runoff in Georgia. That's next Tuesday, I guess it would be. And then, of course, the Senate hearing on January the 6th, the day after. But I'll get to that in a second. But coming back to this point about that 200,000 difference in Pennsylvania, this is the American Thinker. It says, the difference of 202,000 more votes cast than voters voting. Did you get that? More votes cast than voters voting, together with 31,500 over and under votes in the presidential race. I'm not sure what that means. But it says, adds up to an alarming discrepancy of 170,000 votes, which is more than twice the reported statewide difference between the two major candidates for president of the United States. It says on November 24th, 2020, Brock Farr, she's the Secretary of State there in Pennsylvania, she certified election results, and Wolf, that's the governor, issued a certificate of ascertainment of presidential election, stating that Vice President Joe Biden received 80,000 more votes than President Donald Trump. So they certified the election basically based on what all of the counties in Pennsylvania said. They don't check anything. They just take the counties. And of course, you know about all of those counties, particularly the ones around Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. You know about what they were up to the night of November 3rd. Same story as Georgia. Same story as Wisconsin. Same story as Michigan. They just went ahead and certified the election results like other states have done. And there's quite a few, not enough, but there's quite a few in Congress, that say, particularly in the House of Representatives, that are saying, look, we're going to object to the Electoral College count on January the 6th. And Josh Hawley, I think he's the youngest senator in the Senate chamber. He's from Missouri. And he's come forward announcing that he, too, will object. And that's significant because those House of Representative officials that object, there has to be a senator from the other side, the other chamber, that also comes forward in order to slow this down, to delay this so that there is a debate in Congress. So a lot still can happen between now and next Wednesday. A lot can happen even after next Wednesday. And we'll leave that for another program, I suppose. But think of, just look at the Democrat hypocrisy here. They didn't have a senator, I believe, in 2004 and 2016. But there were House of Representatives officials that came forward when the Electoral College count came up in early January in 2004. And then again in 2016, when Donald Trump won the election. And there were all these, there's been footage of these House of Representatives coming to the microphone saying, I object. And then I think it was Joe Biden at the time saying, well, is there a senator who's joining with you? They didn't have one. But these people are worshipped and praised. If they challenge a Republican, if they challenge an election where a Republican wins, any Democrat, Stacey Abrams, case in point,
If you challenge that, you are a hero. You are going to be promoted. And look at what Stacey Abrams is essentially running the state of Georgia, because you've got these weak Republicans who won't stand up to the radical left. They want to go on CNN, they want to go on MSNBC, and they want to be praised by Jim Sciutto and Jake Tapper and Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo. And, oh, they're bringing them on. I saw Jeff Duncan on yesterday, the attorney general or it's the lieutenant governor, I believe he is. He's from Georgia. He's on some of the main networks, the news networks, talking about how Donald Trump should just move on. At least Josh Hawley is protesting, and he's got a lot of support in the House. And we'll see over the next few days just how much support he has from his fellow senators. I mentioned Richard Palmer's program yesterday. He was subbing in for us in our offices at Edstone. And as has become tradition with Richard, he gets to the end of the year and he talks about the lessons that we can take away from my father's articles. He had a trumpet brief, an excellent one last year, that came out. I'm not sure if he talked about this on radio, if he subbed in, but last year he wrote a trumpet brief talking about all of the highlights of the year from my father's writings going back to 2019. And then he comes forward with that again yesterday, and this was in a trumpet brief earlier this week as well. But he talked about the seven lessons that we can learn from my father's articles from 2024. The first point that he noted was that we have to understand the spiritual dimension behind all of this. My father talked recently at the ministerial conference about the spiritual war that we're in. It's a real war. This is not fake. There's a lot of fake news today. There's a lot of fake everything. But the war that we're in spiritually is certainly not fake. And we have to understand this spiritual dimension. You think about all the articles that my father's put out in 2020 about the Barack Obama mystery, for example. Richard mentioned these. Treason in America and Britain. Why Donald Trump will remain America's president. That's the one that we're still actively promoting and advertising. He mentioned Barack Obama in Bible prophecy. There's this war. We've seen the Antiochus administration, and now we're in the midst of this Jeroboam resurgence. We don't know how long that's going to last. It's just temporary. So much prophecy being fulfilled. Richard also noted how we've stressed the importance of history throughout 2020. My father had that program on, the modern interpretation of history. And then Richard asked yesterday, or he quoted my father, how much do Americans understand their own history? All of these monuments being pulled down. I saw a tweet the other day, I think yesterday, the statue of Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. If you can't celebrate, as an American, if you can't celebrate Abraham Lincoln, what are you doing in the United States of America? Seriously, pulling down all of these statues. And Richard said, I'm not sure if we've ever written so much about the importance of history as we did in 2020. Just last year. That's now last year. And how important is it for us to keep our noses in the Bible and in history books so that we can understand this world that we're living in, so that we can know what's coming, so that we can know where this is headed. He talked a bit about Jerusalem yesterday and then China. I do want to spend just a few minutes on this because Jeremiah Jacques had a TB, a trumpet brief that went out last night about the four big Asian stories that were going on in 2020 when most of the world was preoccupied with COVID-19, impeachment, lockdown, the presidential election, and then all of these developments in China. On the program yesterday, Richard quoted from my father, China has lied, buried the truth, and refused to let experts in to examine evidence, all the while hoarding medical supplies. Everyone knows China's covering something up. China caused the plague. This is a brazen aggression. This is on the level of an act of war. Look at what China's just gotten away with over the past year. The plague started with them. And then they squashed it right away because, again, it wasn't super – it certainly wasn't comparable to what happened in 1918 with the Spanish flu. So they stomped it out right away using their draconian measures, you know, the authoritarian state, just squashing it. It disappears from China, and then it just spreads throughout the West. And then you look at the way the West responded and reacted, eliminating all of our freedoms, all of our liberties, so many of them, not all of them, but all of, but a lot of them. What a year it was for China. What a year it was for China. This is from Jeremiah Jacques' TB last night. It says in, well, he talks about how easy it would have been to overlook some of these developments in Asia because of all that's happening in the West. He says for Russia, for example, more powerful and brazen. And then he comes to China, stronger and more dangerous. It says under President Xi, China spent 2020 combining thuggery with opportunism in order to jockey into an unprecedentedly strong global position. That's what's happened. The CCP is marching forward. That's right. The Communist Party of China. Jeremiah gives some important history here of what was happening in January and February, how China was working in cahoots with the World Health Organization. Dr. Tedros, as you heard there at the top of the hour, feature story news, quoting Dr. Tedros of all people. Hasn't he been thoroughly discredited for what he said back in January, February, and March? Oh, no, they still put him forward. That propaganda arm of the Communist Chinese Party. Jeremiah covers some of that recent history in this trumpet brief. It says China then reopened its economy. This is after the early stages of the pandemic. China then reopened its economy well ahead of other countries and considerably outperformed them for the year. By August, its exports had soared to their third highest level on record. And then Jeremiah quotes from my father again. Richard used this same quote, China causing the plague, and so on. He talks about the crackdown on Hong Kong. Hong Kong's well on its way to just being another city, any old city in China under communist China rule. We were told 20-some years ago this would never happen. They'd always have their autonomy. After the British left, it would just be Hong Kong, you know, functioning sort of and by itself with its own government and authority and so on. That's not happened. Look at what the CCP did during 2020 with Hong Kong while everyone else was distracted with COVID-19, which came from China. That's astounding when you think of all that has happened just in this past year. This year alone, and all of these Western companies that have just surrendered to the CCP. You look, massive organizations like Apple and Disney, the NBA, whatever the CCP says, you know, we're not going to offend them. But boy, we're going to go after Donald Trump. Oh, sure. Sure, he's the bad man. But these communists in Beijing, well, we just want to submit to them because that's a big market for us. That's the way the thinking is. It says, on top of all that, China completed a quantum computer that makes the West supercomputers nearly obsolete and planted a Chinese flag on the moon. Finally, Jeremiah says, writing for the Hindu, Anath Krishnan summed it up tidily. It says, if 2020 started as China's annus horribilis, the year has, in the eyes of many strategic experts in Beijing, only hastened China's ascendancy and narrowed the gap with the United States, its great rival. And that, of course, has been China's goal from the start. And they're willing to let it play out and wait patiently for the United States to collapse so that they can then rush in and replace the U.S. as the sole superpower on Earth. Of course, there's other prophecies that factor into this. But that's their goal. That's their aim. Richard, in his Newsstack today, sent an article, China and the EU sign a big investment deal. We've talked before about the Mart of Nations prophecy, these nations aligning in opposition to the United States, and Britain. The New York Times said Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany has made the agreement a priority. This is, again, a trade agreement between Europe and China. It's made this agreement a priority because of its importance to German car makers and other manufacturers with large operations in China. You see, President Trump has stood up to China. He stood up to the CCP. And we've now learned that there's a lot of Democrats in particular that have been compromised by the Communist Chinese Party. They have been compromised. And that's why the attack is, it's been so vicious. We've got to take out Donald Trump. That's all that we're preoccupied with here in the U.S. And meanwhile, as Richard has noted, as Jeremiah has noted, as my father has written, look at all that is going on or that has happened, even as we've been distracted by so many of our own problems here at home. When we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit, or I guess we've touched on it, so it's not a complete shift, but we'll talk more about the COVID-19 pandemic and also what God has to say about keeping ourselves in good health physically. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Breathing out, breathing in, more precious than it's ever been. We can't take it for granted. Never in our lifetimes has that fact been clearer, that precious breath of life. It might start to shorten. It might struggle. It might cease. How can it be protected? How can it be prolonged? How can it be saved? And what is the purpose anyway? What is the purpose of human life? What should you use that breath for? Most of us turn to doctors. It's a reflex, but it's becoming more and more clear that the medical industry does not have all the answers. It can be amazingly helpful, but can it actually heal? Is this the place to turn for healing after all? The human body, human breath, human life was designed, powered, preserved. It was created. Who made it? With something so important as your life, you need to know the creator of life. The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong will show you from your Bible the answers to the questions even most Christians are afraid to ask. Is the day of miracles past? Does the living God heal sickness? Did God raise up medical science for our day? What is the role of doctors? You can have not only sound health, but a sound mind. Go to thetrumpet.com and search The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I mentioned on Wednesday's show that you have this so-called second wave of COVID-19, and at the same time, virtually no cases of influenza. The flu has gone. It's poof. It's out in the air, and it's over. No more influenza. It's all COVID-19. I mentioned also on Wednesday's show how that, as Richard noted, when you compare the hospital stays in December, January, it's no different this year than it has been in years past. And all of these temporary hospitals that have been constructed for the COVID-19 pandemic, they're now disassembled. They're not being staffed by extra employees because there's so many that are sick. And yet, in listening to the news, and again, I'm not denying the fact that the hospitals in the UK are full, but they were full 3 years ago at this time of year. They were full 2 years ago at this time of year. Nobody cared then. Now it's featured all over the place, certainly in the UK, but all over the world too. Still, 15 days to stop the spread. 15 days, they said in March of last year. Listen to this report yesterday from ITV News on the second wave in Britain, clip 3.
We are on the cusp of catastrophe. That is the stark, dire warning from doctors tonight. Hospitals in England are treating more coronavirus patients than ever before, and staff are feeling overwhelmed and in crisis.
A lot of people are understandably feeling anxious, frustrated, and tired. And now, of course, again, we're back in the eye of the storm with this second wave of coronavirus sweeping Europe and indeed this country.
And London and the South East are those closest to the edge, with many NHS trusts operating in major incident mode. Doctors tell us COVID cases are soaring and they face a staggering number of patients that are leaving bed shortages, problems with oxygen supplies in some cases, and Queen's Hospital in Essex says some people are being cared for in ambulances queuing up outside.
You notice the shots of the ambulances there, they're parking lots, and then a good bit of it was following one ambulance, I presume in London. Okay, one ambulance, an aerial shot following a yellow ambulance across London. If as Sam pointed out this morning, you go back to March, when the epidemic first was getting attention all over the world, they, in Italy in particular, that's where it really got noticed. Because there were actual pictures of wards filled with people, of patients that were out in the hallway because they didn't have enough room in the rooms. And here's this report from ITV, and they're basically just going to one doctor who says, yeah, this is the worst ever. And then some aerial shots of ambulances in a parking lot and an ambulance driving across London. Where is the queue of ambulances? Where are the patients lying on the ground or in the hallways? It seems like it would be easy to show this. This is the United Kingdom. I'm not saying it's completely fake. It's a lot of fakeness, though. There's a lot of fakeness to this. Because when compared to previous years, the numbers, as I told you on Wednesday, you can follow the charts. They're about the same. And what it shows, what it demonstrates, as Richard noted on Wednesday in the notes that he sent to me, is the complete and total failure of the National Health Service, socialized medicine, in other words, in the United Kingdom. That's what this demonstrates. The quality of care over there is getting worse and worse and worse, to where all it takes for the system to be just a little bit overburdened, it's just a slight uptick in sickness, and then they're at capacity, and then there's no more space. I mean, let's be real about the statistics. You know, they had a fireworks celebration in London last night. Sadiq Khan, he's the mayor, he's a radical leftist, and they've got all these images being shot into the sky, certainly the first and foremost among them. I mean, if you are woke, this was the fireworks extravaganza for you. All of your favorite left-wing causes, they were blaring brightly in the sky last night in London, including the NHS with the big heart around it. Oh, we love the NHS. Oh, the NHS can do no wrong. Oh, the NHS is perfect. And you see all of these video images, these memes, these lip-sync doctors dancing in hallways, sending their videos off to TikTok. There's no end to these. Apparently, it is so overburdened that these hospital care workers, these doctors, these nurses have all the time in the world to make these funny videos that really aren't so funny. Listen to this. Now, switching over to commentary on this side of the pond, listen to this from, I believe this is on Fox News. Again, they're touching on the fact that, hey, there's no influenza. Isn't that great? That's been, I guess, one silver lining to all of this. At least we haven't had an epidemic of influenza this season. Here's clip two.
The important thing to take away from this is not the squiggly lines. It's that over a five-year rolling average, we traditionally have had about a 15%, and doctor, you can correct me if I'm getting this wrong, 15% positivity rate in normal flu. Right now, our positive flu diagnoses is down to 0.1%. What's going on with this, Dr. McCary?
Yeah, basically, Will, we have no flu this year. People are wearing their masks, they're being careful, they're doing the right things. A lot of people got the flu shot. The country's oddly complacent about the number of flu deaths each year. You know, 4 years ago, it was 81,000 Americans. Nobody really did change any behavior.
So listen to these people as they comment on the fact that there's no flu. What's going on with this? And the good doctor says, yeah, basically, there's no flu this year. Why? People are wearing their mask. So the mask evidently is preventing the flu from spreading, but not COVID-19. Are these people brain dead? Have they lost all sense of reality? No influenza because of the masks and all of these things we're covering our faces with? And yet, supposedly, the new variant of COVID-19, it's working its way into the United States. Well, yeah, there was a young man in Colorado who got it. He wasn't even traveling, okay? He didn't even travel to the UK and back. But he's there in Denver now, and so that just tells you it's spreading. And it spreads even faster. Not influenza. That's completely under control because of the face mask. But the COVID-19, the second wave, it is off and running, and there is no stopping it. Now, keep wearing the mask. You better keep wearing that mask. We're going to have to do that right through 2021. Maybe if we're lucky, maybe the holidays at the end of this year, the end of this calendar year, will be somewhat normal. We don't know for sure. We've got the vaccine. We've got the mask. We've got all these other things. And it's done a really good job, for the most part, keeping the flu from spreading, but not COVID-19. Here's the BBC reporting. I'll read this to you. It says Professor Montgomery, who works in intensive care in London's Whittington Hospital and leads a research group, said, "We are in a lot of trouble in UK intensive care right now." So here again, overburden, not enough care facilities and so on. It says just huge numbers coming in. My heart goes out as well to our emergency departments and so on. He told Radio 5's Rachel Burden, it was wrong to blame the surge in cases and deaths on the new variant of coronavirus, which was only slightly more transmissible and caused the same symptoms. So it's wrong to blame this on the virus. It's certainly wrong to blame it on China. Can't blame it on... So what do we blame it on? Who's at fault here? Well, he explains. It says, it's making me actually very angry now that people are laying the blame on the virus, and it is not the virus. It is the people. People are not washing their hands. They are not wearing their masks. So he's angry, this professor or doctor or whoever he is. He is angry. Because we're saying this is a new variant, this is a new strain, and it spreads quickly. He says, no, it's the people. You're not washing your hands. You're not wearing your mask. Now, at least there's no influenza. Now, we can look at the masks and the hand washing, and we can take credit for the fact that we virtually eliminated the flu. It says, finally, they're spreading this virus. Other people will spread it. And people will die. They won't know they have killed people, but they have. This is the BBC. If you don't wear a mask, you are guilty of murder. That's just like the governor of New York last year, Governor Cuomo. If you don't wear your mask, you literally may kill another person, he said a couple of months after they all said the masks don't work. The masks don't work, this doctor added. I'm watching whole families getting wiped out here, and it's got to stop. He blames it all on not wearing the mask, not washing the hands. So from one doctor, from one expert to the next, well, you could get anything. It just depends on the person, I suppose. And all the coverage just continues to flow out like an avalanche from the BBC, from the Times of London, from the Telegraph, from CNN, from MSNBC. You can see why. You listen to those montages we played on Tuesday and Wednesday, and it's just it's almost laughable were it not so terribly serious. The frequency with which they get it wrong, flat out wrong, and then just dust themselves off and move on. Here's some common sense. Here's some truth based upon God's word. This is from Herbert W. Armstrong. He says, "We pride ourselves on being the most advanced, enlightened, scientifically developed generation that ever lived. We suppose that we're now on the doorstep of eradicating sickness and disease due to the miraculous." He's writing this back in the 1960s. Maybe some experts would be at least a little bit humbled today. But in the 20th century, all of these wonder drugs that were being produced, and oh yeah, we're about to stamp out all of this disease. Mr. Armstrong says, "We couldn't be more wrong. Modern civilization is not bringing health nor abolishing disease. While the medical profession works to reduce TB, cancer, and other diseases, modern civilization is creating new diseases never heard of a few generations ago. Sickness and disease are on an accelerating increase." He's right. A year ago, just 365 days ago, no one on earth knew what COVID-19 was. That was just 1 year ago today. 1 year ago today, we were talking about the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. And then Soleimani, he was taken out in those first few days of January. And now, a year later, COVID-19, COVID, COVID, COVID. Mr. Armstrong says, "I suppose many would ask, but isn't it natural to be sick? Are we not made in such a way that we simply have to become sick and contract disease? And didn't God raise up medical science to combat it?" You know, it's interesting reading this from the 60s because, you know, for the longest time it was, well, you get sick, you get the flu, it's just natural, it's just normal. And now you have doctors like we read in the BBC that say, "No, no. This spreads because people aren't wearing their mask." And there's nothing in all of this coverage about everything else we're shoveling into our faces. Just put a wrap on the face. Never mind what you put into your face. Never mind what you eat. Never mind how you live. Never mind the laws of radiant health, whether you observe them or not. It's so easy to just say, put on the mask, and we need to have more authoritarian measures from the top of our nation's government. It's just an excuse to grab power. That's what it amounts to. And there's no truth when it comes to actually telling the audience, look, here's what you can do to get into better health and to prevent disease, to prevent the spread of disease. It says here, "Sickness and disease are not natural. We were made to be well." This is Herbert Armstrong. "The Almighty God made the human body so that even though composed of material substance from the ground, its normal condition is one of robust, invigorating, radiant good health. Sickness and disease are abnormal. They are the penalty of violation of natural laws. They are physical sin." So there is a violation of laws at play here. But it's not whether you're wearing a mask or not. The laws have to do with diet and exercise and fresh air and avoiding bodily injury and having a positive mental outlook, among other things. And those things are not even discussed today. They're not even talked about, at least not in the mainstream. It says, but some of the most noted physicians, this is Herbert Armstrong writing in 1967, have given thought and study into the causes, and leading doctors, this again goes back 50-some years, they've said that 90 to 92% of all sickness and disease results from faulty diet. He says in another article that you shouldn't really say that, well, I caught the cold or I got this fever from someone else, because that comes into our systems when we are weak. When our immune systems are weak, we bring it on ourselves. Now, I will readily admit it's a challenge. It's very difficult in the Western world to maintain good health. You drive down the street in any city in the United States, and every restaurant you're looking at is probably going to have 95% filth. 95% of a carbs, sugar-based diet, and very little in the way of actual living food. So it's not easy, for sure. But the solution to COVID-19 or anything else is getting back to these laws. And this is what's coming in the wonderful world of tomorrow. There is a solution. There's a cause for every effect. And what Herbert Armstrong's talking about here is root causes. He says in another article, this is 1962, Jesus Christ was never sick, yet his body was just like our bodies. He set us the example. He determined that if we obey the laws God has given as our responsibility to obey, the body itself will function regularly in perfect health, strong, vigor, vitality, energy, and strength, and never get sick. He says further on, well, I'll just read it. It says it is far more precision designed and made a precision designed and made mechanism than the Rolls Royce. It just won't break down or get sick of itself. It functions automatically. But like your automobile, it needs to be taken care of, as one conscientious chauffeur put it. Our bodies need to be taken care of. In the Psalms, it talks about our bodies being a perfect mechanism. God designed them. God created them. And there are definite laws, physical health laws, that if obeyed, will give us a significant improvement in our overall health, our vitality, our strength, our vigor, our energy, and so on. 3 John 2, it says, Beloved, I wish above all things that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. God wishes above all things. John wrote that to the brethren, saying, I wish above all things that you would be healthy, prosperous in health. Listen to what it says over in Ephesians 4. This is Ephesians 4 and verse 11. It says God's talking about the government and the church and the spiritual body, that is the church. You can read more on that in 1 Corinthians 12 as well. But verse 11, it says, And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. So there's all these various members in the spiritual body of Christ. Jesus himself is the head. And then he gives these other leaders so that the body might be perfected, so that it might be made healthy, spiritually speaking. And you can obviously draw the lessons from this physically, okay? Verse 13, it says, Till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect man, unto the measure and the stature of the fullness of Christ. That's Ephesians 4 and verse 13. But now look down. Now think on this more from the physical standpoint. Verse 16 says, From whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplies, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, makes increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. Here is pictured a healthy body that is fitly joined together, every part playing a crucial role, every part of the body contributing to the health of the whole body. Or if you have an injured part, as some of us do, it takes away from that strength and that vitality overall. But you bring healing into this as well. Jesus said to those that came to him for healing, if they had faith, he said, your faith has made you whole, healthy, from top to bottom. Well, I could take you over to 1 Corinthians 6. I guess we have time. We have a minute quickly now. 1 Corinthians 6, where it says that we're bought with a price. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19, it says, Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God, and that you are not your own? Then verse 20 says, For you are bought with a price. Therefore, here's the admonition, Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit or your mind, which are God's. Both belong to God. He's our maker. He created us. And God says, glorify God in your body. Bring glory to God in the way that you take care of yourself, just like you take care of a fancy new car and what kind of fuel that you put into it and so on. Glorify God, Paul says, in your body and in your spirit. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, submit it to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next week.